The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. Let's see, today is October the 14th of 2012. And if you're listening to this after the fact, that, well, we don't know yet who wins the series.
That's right. So don't take any predictions we might make at this point.
It may be the Cubs. Yeah. I don't know.
That would truly mean the end of the world as we know it.
It would indeed.
But we'd feel fine. Yes. Actually, as we are about to equidistant, actually, we're closer to St. Louis here than we are Chicago.
We really are.
Yeah, 4 hours to Chicago,
and
2.5 to St.
Louis. For many years, so...
I am happy for a number of the players, and Mike Matheny, who's the manager of the Cardinals, a rookie manager who was part of their teams in the 1990s when they had such great success, is a first-year manager. And for him to get past the one-game play-in series against the Atlanta Braves, despite the call, the infield fly rule call, and to have come back in Game 5 the way they did against the Washington Nationals is really something. So since the Cubs ain't in it, we can feel good about the Cardinals. As we take on the Giants, they're my team. As the Cardinals take on the Giants tonight.
And what many of you don't know, Derek actually does suit up every game, and he's always ready in case the phone rings. And so far, it's...
Put me in, Coach. Yep.
We are very sad to announce, if you haven't heard it already, that today, October 14th, did see the passing of someone who was in Congress for many years.
Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania has passed away. He was one of the members of the Warren Commission, which investigated the death of President John F. Kennedy. In fact, he's credited with being the man who came up with the magic bullet theory, the idea that one bullet was able to hit Governor Connally of Texas, ricochet around, and then hit President Kennedy, and yet appear on the floor of the limousine in pristine condition, which if you've ever seen anything on television that relates to ballistics and firearms, you know that once a bullet hits a target, it is usually deformed. And if it hits several targets or has several impacts, as this bullet is supposed to, including bone, the lead should have been deformed. And yet this bullet was...
And it just magically appeared there.
Not deformed, at least. Yeah.
Arlen Specter, didn't he start out as a Republican?
Yes, he did. He switched parties in the 2000s, I believe, after the party moved what he felt was too far to the right. And essentially, that meant, I believe, and I'm projecting here perhaps my own interpretation on his own motives. I don't know his real motives, but I suspect that the party had moved too far to the right, he felt, for him to be reelected, which is why he jumped parties to the Democratic.
The ironic thing about that is, if I understand the Republican Party as it stands today, is really a revamping of the old Democratic Party from the South. Am I wrong on that? The Republican in name only, the old rhino tag that you see, if you didn't know, the R-I-N-O, rhino, means Republican in name only. Essentially, it means that these are people who really had different political views in the past and at some point became a Republican. One of those was Ronald Reagan. He was a Democrat for years.
Yeah, and then shifted over. The Democrats of the old South, I mean, the South was solidly Democrat, and that was in large part a reaction to the Republican Party following the Civil War, but following 1968, where the Democratic Party, I think, began a shift, a lurch to the far left, the values of the Democratic Party at the national level no longer reflected the values of the majority of people living in the South, which is a very conservative belt in the United States. So, yeah, the South, which used to be solidly Democratic, is now solidly Republican.
I was raised as a Democrat, and my dad, if he were alive today, would probably not call himself a Democrat. At least he would, he'd be loath to admit that his beliefs were no longer in line with a party by that name. But anyway, I found it ironic when he switched from, and isn't that what they constantly are doing? Yeah. They switch, they flip-flop on, well, I just read an article today talking about, written by Piers Morgan, who was discussing his opinion of Mitt Romney. And he felt that Mitt Romney is one of the most disingenuous people out there because he's constantly flip-flopping on issues, but that he would be better for our country than a re-election of Obama, which kind of surprised me. But Piers Morgan spent 90% of the article disrespecting Mitt Romney, calling him every name and saying he's this and he does that and I don't like that. But his conclusion was he'd be the better choice. I can't decide if that opinion was good or bad.
And I think that's probably the opinion of a lot of true conservatives in the United States right now, especially Christian conservatives, because we're looking at the two major candidates. You know, and I hadn't thought about this until it came up during the vice presidential debate this past week between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan, that both of the vice presidential candidates are Roman Catholics. Depending on how you classify President Obama's religious affiliation, this may be the first election in the history of the United States in which none of the four men or four people at the top of the two tickets, the two major tickets, are of a Protestant denomination.
I think that you could probably make that argument.
Now, somebody might say, well, okay, if you accept that Barack Obama, if you accept him at his word that he is a Christian and that his, since he is not a Roman Catholic, he would technically be a Protestant.
Well, yes, I suppose.
But I don't believe that he is, he may be a Christian in name, but I don't believe in practice that he is. You know, for as much as we can know about him from the fruit of his works, I'm not qualified to sit in judgment on the state of his soul. But
while you're on it, let's discuss the WorldNet Daily story that was out last week about his ring.
I was kind of leading to that. So, yeah, and that was what made me think about this when it came up during the vice presidential debate. Jerry Corsi, who we recently had as a guest on View from
respect.
The Bunker, and Respect is a pretty careful researcher, published an article at WorldNet Daily within the last week or so about the ring that Barack Obama wears, which on first glance appears to be a wedding band. But when you look at old pictures of him dating back to his days at Occidental College, he's been wearing this ring since he was in his early 20s, at least, possibly even earlier. It's a ring with a unique design that he brought with him from Indonesia, or was given as a gift from Indonesia. I don't know how he obtained it, but it's from Indonesia. He'd been wearing it on the ring finger of his left hand for years, even before he and Michelle met. So he'd been wearing that for a long, long time. And I don't know how Jerry Corsi was tipped to this, but he had the got a hold of some high-resolution photographs of the president, which included the ring. And he had the ring and its design analyzed by experts in Arabic script. And the design is actually the beginning of the phrase, which has a name, and I don't know it off the top of my head.
I'll look it up. You go ahead.
A phrase in among Muslims, there is no God but Allah. And then the second half of that, which you cannot see on the ring, perhaps is not on the ring, is Muhammad is his prophet. But apparently the script, the design on the ring reads, there is no God but Allah. So for him to wear that on his hand for the last 20 or more years, one would assume has some significance to him. I certainly wouldn't wear something as a piece of jewelry just because I like the design if I knew the design had some meaning to it.
And surely growing up in Indonesia, as you say, he would know
what it means. And studying in Islamic school, he would know what it meant.
The Shahada.
The Shahada, right. So the ring apparently is a design based on the first half of the Shahada, written in Arabic script. There is no God but Allah. Now, interestingly, and I think this is really interesting, because when Jerome Corsi co-wrote the book Unfit for Command, which was the Swift Boat book about John Kerry, he was on Glenn Beck's program, and Glenn Beck also had him on a number of times to talk about the North American Union, which Beck has devoted a lot of attention to over the last 8 years. When he began writing about the birth certificate, however, Glenn Beck dropped Jerry Corsi from his guest list and began referring to him in not very flattering terms.
Birther.
And this article at WorldNet Daily apparently got enough attention that Glenn Beck's news site, TheBlaze.com, picked it up and did a piece on it. And it was really an interesting twist.
It was. They contacted Beck's staff contacted an Arabic professor, mm-hmm. Arabic-speaking professor, who took a look at the images and said, yes, indeed, it does appear to be the first half of the Shahada. But he said that in order to make the claim that President Obama is somehow through this ring making that statement, you know, repeating the Shahada, having it on his hand, making this near and dear to his heart, is that you should have the second part, which is, and Muhammad is his prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Beck seemed to run with that and make the case that, once again, Jerome Corsi and WorldNet Daily are ate up.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my words, not Beck's. He simply doesn't know that phrase. And so the next day, WorldNet Daily came out saying, ha-ha, Glenn Beck has just proven our point by going to an Arabic professor that we did not contact. He did.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, our guy, well, a team of guys, of experts, have it right. That it does say that it is, I'm sorry, I don't have
there is no God but Allah.
There is no God but Allah.
Right.
And the professor, however, that Glenn Beck's people contacted said, however, because to a Muslim, the word Allah means God, what it simply says is there's no God but God.
Mm-hmm.
So if, and this is what the professor seemed to be implying, if President Obama wears this, seeing it as making the statement there's no God but God, but if in his mind he's thinking, and I don't know how you could, you know, make that leap, excuse me, he's wearing a ring that has the first half of the Shahada on it.
Right, right.
If it had something from the Old Testament or the New Testament, yes, then we'd know for sure he was speaking about the God of the Bible.
Yeah,
but
there
is
not. No God,
and I'm sorry,
but
Allah is not the same as Jehovah.
Yeah. What was the there's a declaration that's similar to that that's in the Old Testament, Moses speaking to the Israel and Yahweh is your God or something like that.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, anyway, but you're right.
I'll get our team of researchers.
Yeah, that's right. There is a bizarre, I think that's a bizarre way to spin it. And I'm not sure why Glenn Beck felt and his staff felt compelled to do that. It seems like a long way around to make a point. And certainly if again, if somebody were to wear a ring that said there is no God but Yahweh or Jehovah, would Muslims take it the same way that Glenn Beck is trying to spin this in The Blaze? Or Glenn Beck's staff? I don't know if that...
I don't know. Yeah. You're right.
So,
I don't
anyway,
know when Glenn Beck
just
has something...
Just kind of an odd story from the past week. But again, independently... Well, it would appear anyway to be independently confirmed. I doubt you'll see this story make the major news media, but WorldNet Daily and The Blaze... although they've got different interpretations of what this means, taking a look at that ring that Barack Obama's been wearing for decades now and confirming that it does, in fact, say there is no God but Allah.
Well, I should be able to find that, but for some reason I can't find it. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And
it's a phrase that has been because you and I weren't brought mm-hmm. up in synagogues. We don't know that.
Yeah.
I'll keep looking and... You could just carry on to the next story.
Yeah. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one.
Is one. That's what I was trying to find.
Yeah, Deuteronomy 6. And presumably in the original Hebrew, it's not going to say the Lord. It's going to say Yahweh.
So, yes.
Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh.
Well, I think one of the arguments is that in Old Testament times, at least this is what I've read, Baal, Al, mm-hmm. El, Allah are all variations of the same word root, which all translate to God.
Mm-hmm.
That may or may not be true. But Moses asked, what is your name?
Yeah.
And I think he asked, I suspect he asked, because, you know, a lot of these names are floating around here, and ultimately they're all, everybody says, well, it's all the same thing. They all mean the same thing, essentially. So tell me your name so mm-hmm. I can tell them who you are.
Right, right. Make
and that's
sure
what
that
he says,
not...
I am that I am.
Mm-hmm. Tell them Yo. I am sent you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think that somebody wearing a ring that says there is no God but Allah is simply saying there is no God but God.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. Especially one who was educated and in Islamic school as a child.
I will say this. It could be. We don't know the history of that ring. I'll play devil's advocate, so to speak.
Well, that's fair.
I'll play president's advocate. And it's possible that that ring was given to him by someone near and dear to his heart, like
his
mother.
That's very true. That's very true.
And it could be that he wears it not caring the least about what is written on it
mm-hmm.
and doesn't even think about it.
Yeah.
To him, it may be nothing more than a good luck charm, which is one of the points that was made in the Beck article,
mm-hmm.
that this sort of thing is sometimes worn as a good luck charm. And in the same way that some people who are nominal Christians wear a cross as sort of a good luck charm.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
Or the way the president carries the little monkey god in his pocket.
Yeah.
Hanuman. I was going to say Saruman, but I knew that
no,
wasn't right.
No,
Hanuman,
no, and that's a different
guy.
Ring,
yeah.
too.
Yes, yes. So, elsewhere in the world, I think we've talked enough politics. We could talk about the debates, but...
Well, we need to get into geopolitics, you know.
Geopolitics is a little different, right?
It gets outside of the United States and get into the Middle East, where things are really heating up.
Yeah. Syria and Turkey are essentially fighting a proxy war at the moment.
They are, and, you know, depending on the day, I have different opinions as to what the proxy players are, for whom they are proxying. And sometimes it seems like it's Russia and the United States. Other times it seems like it's Iran and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it feels like it's Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I didn't realize until just a few weeks ago that, because I'd always wondered in the back of my mind, why are the Syrians, which is a majority Sunni state, allied with Iran? Well, it's because the Alawite clan, from which Bashar Assad hails, is Shia.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a minority Shia government in a majority Sunni state. The Saudis...
And Turkey is Sunni.
Sunni, that's right. As are the Saudis.
Saudi Arabians.
Yeah.
And I believe... Is it Qatar?
Qatar.
Are they also...
Bahrain is the other Shia nation in the...
yes,
but they are
I just
ruled.
Recently read an article about why Qatar and Saudi Arabia are really interested in Syria. And it has to do with a gas pipeline
yes.
mm-hmm. going to Europe.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. There's a pipeline that runs through Syria that they would like to have control of. It is interesting that when the fighting was taking place around Homs, that the pipeline was blowed up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that once again comes back to King Oil and in this case, natural gas. The Russians would have a vested interest in keeping that pipeline out of Europe because that would weaken the Russian stranglehold on
that's
the energy
brilliant.
Supplies.
That is so true.
Yeah. The Russians right now have a stranglehold on the gas supplies that go into Eastern Europe through Ukraine. And there's an underground pipeline that runs into Germany past Poland. And there's a story from a couple of years back that we didn't really ever discuss or examine in terms of its geopolitical impact. But essentially, the entire government of Poland, the senior officials of the government of Poland a couple of years ago, died in one plane crash.
That's right. That is right.
So
I'll have to do some digging on that this week. But in the realm of natural gas fields and things like that, I remember from a few years ago where there was a story that Angela Merkel had met with Vladimir Putin, and they had inked a deal to work together there in the, what is the body of water that runs in that northern area? Sorry, it isn't the North,
North Sea? Bering Straits?
No, Bering Straits.
That's Alaska.
Hold on, and I'll find it.
A little background on that Polish air crash that was in 2010, the 10th of April. Polish Air Force plane crashed near the city of Smolensk, Russia, with 96 people on board. All perished. These included the president of Poland, Lech Kaczynski, his wife Maria, the former president, the chief of the Polish general staff, and other senior Polish military officers, the president of the National Bank of Poland, the deputy foreign minister, other government officials, 15 members of parliament, senior members of the Polish clergy, and relatives of victims of the Katyn massacre, which took place, if I'm not mistaken, during World War II. It was 1940 massacre of Polish officers. So anyway, they were on their way to Russia, and this one plane crash essentially decapitated the Polish government.
Yes. So yeah. Well, Baltic Sea.
Baltic Sea, right? Which you know, if you get Baltic and then you get Mediterranean, you get the purples, and then you're good to go. That's right. Monopoly reference there.
I was going to say, where has your brain just gone? it's smoking.
Yeah. So anyway, the situation in Syria between Syria and the Turks has ratcheted up. As of midnight Saturday this weekend, and that would be October 13 into October 14, the Syrian government has closed its airspace to Turkish planes. Mm-hmm. And this is after the Turks intercepted a plane bound for Syria, claiming that
they scrambled jets and forced it down.
Yeah. And they claimed it carried Russian weapons for the Syrian army. Damascus says this is a lie. And has challenged the Turkish government to put the seized goods on public view to basically prove the point. So, as of this afternoon, October 14th, the Turkish government has moved tanks to high ground overlooking the border and is threatening to move tanks into Syria.
You know, I saw a really, really interesting interview last night. Was it last night or the night before on Al Jazeera? An interview with the general who has been leading the FSA. Is it FSA?
The Free Syrian Army?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was doing so from Turkey there for quite a while because of assassination attempts. He's back in Syria now. And he was asked, essentially, you know, what changed during the time that you were gone? And he said, you know, when I've come back, I have realized that essentially he's lost control of some of his troops. There has been a fracturing that has taken place. And he made the implication, he didn't come right out and name names, but he said, depending upon which country is helping them out.
Hmm.
So there are lots of foreigners in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is this is reported by Los Angeles Times on Saturday, October 13th. The Free Syrian Army and an Al-Qaeda-linked group called Al-Nusra Front surrounded a government missile base in Syria. So it's openly being reported by major news sources here in the West that the Free Syrian Army is at least for now, collaborating with and perhaps has been infiltrated by Al-Qaeda and the groups linked to Al-Qaeda.
Well, can I just make a statement? Thank you, Israel, for taking out the reactor in Syria.
Amen.
Many years ago.
Not that many years ago.
Could you take out the one in Iran?
Yeah, not that many years ago, actually.
Well, it's within the last 20 years. Was it more recently than 10?
It was since we started doing this program. Operation Orchard, which was an Israeli airstrike on a nuclear reactor carried out just after after midnight local time, September 6th, 2007.
Oh, that recently?
Yeah, yeah. This was a base a site that it was suspected that the North Koreans were helping Syria to build. A squadron of 69 F-15s, or F-15s, knocked out the base. So, yeah. Yeah, just doing a little checking here. But yeah, 2007. Yeah. So it was about 5 years ago that this, so just not that long ago that a nuclear facility in Syria was knocked out. And you're right. Thank Israel and thank the Lord that this has been knocked out, because it's not something we'd want in the hands of Al-Qaeda. But this is the thing that a question that we've been raising all along. Sure, Bashar al-Assad and his family are not the kind of people that I think most of us would choose to head up a government under which we live. But if he's not in charge there, just like in Iraq, if, you know, without Saddam Hussein keeping a lid on things, in Egypt without Hosni Mubarak keeping a lid on things, in Libya without Muammar Gaddafi keeping a lid on things, who holds the weapons? And we're backing these rebels in Syria. Hillary Clinton has been arguing and agitating for military intervention. And yet, if we take Assad out, are we actually allowing Al-Qaeda or the Muslim Brotherhood, its parent organization, essentially, to take control in Syria, just as they seem to have done in Egypt and perhaps in Libya?
Well, you know what they say, when you take the strong man out,
yeah,
there's no one to hold back the pretenders to the throne, so to speak. Yeah, I think it will be very, very bad. The power vacuum created with whatever ends up happening to the Assad family, if I were in the Assad family, I think it'd be leaving town.
Yeah, but he does have some powerful friends. Again, it seems that Russia has a vested interest in keeping Assad in place, as do the Iranians.
Well, that is why when Turkey forced down the Russian plane, saying that there were weapons aboard that were being taken into Syria, that just seemed like just a show, because... Yeah. Why on earth would Russia put any kind of armaments on board a passenger plane? Mind you, it was a relatively small passenger plane. Mm-hmm. There were only about 30 people on board. But why do that when you can take them into the port on your own ship?
Yeah. Yeah, Russia does have that port there.
At TARDIS.
Mm-hmm. So that time, perhaps. I mean, you know, time is of the essence in a conflict like this. Maybe they... But you're right. It does seem like the Turks are trying to justify their reaction. And from what we're hearing from a friend who lives in Turkey, who is teaching English there, and in fact, I'll have a conversation with him tomorrow.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad.
Yeah, we've got this planned. We'll get a sense for what the media in Turkey is reporting, and what the sense of the Turkish, you know, the Turkish street is saying. It is not at all clear that the citizens of Turkey want war with Syria, even though its government seems to be pushing them in that direction. From what we have heard, from what he tells us, the people in Turkey are about 2-1 opposed to the idea of war with Syria.
Well,
of course, we were that much opposed to Obamacare, and we got it anyway, so that won't stop anything. But we'll talk with him a little more about that tomorrow and have that for you within the next few days.
Well, I suspect that the news that we get over here from Turkey, the sources that are in English, or even the sort of bot translations that we can get through Google Translate or Babelfish or whatever, I doubt that we're really getting the full story.
Mm-hmm.
I read an article just a few days ago by a man who says that he has come out of a jihadist background, and he is now, I believe he calls himself a Christian. He made the point that he lived in Turkey for a while, and he does not find any sentiment that is positive toward the United States in Turkey, that they generally hate us, and that one of the most popular books there is Mein Kampf, that another popular book is one that was written all about how the United States essentially has raped and pillaged through the Middle East. In fact, a movie was made, I think, out of the book, and it's one of the most popular movies over there. So we are portrayed in a very evil light. Now, should we be surprised? We get the same sort of propaganda films over here. Let's take a look at, let's just talk about Russia.
Mm-hmm.
We've had not only Red Dawn from many years ago, but Red Dawn has been remade, except it's not Russia anymore. It's North Korea. Is that who's coming in the new movie? But we portray other countries as being evil, one note kind of, they only have this one type of person who lives there. I know when I grew up that the USSR was painted as the most evil bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Not one person over there is worthy of your thought, and that they are trying to kill us every moment of the day. I remember being terrified of the USSR when I was a little kid. I was convinced that they were going to bomb us. We used to have, if you're my age or older, duck and cover. I remember being told by my teacher that because we lived near the Jefferson Proving Ground, that that was a target and we'd probably be wiped off the map. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember going home and begging Dad to please build a bomb shelter in our backyard.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you're right about the remake of Red Dawn. They originally had made China the villain.
Ah.
But in the interest of preserving the lucrative Chinese box office, mm-hmm. they changed the villainous nation to North Korea, which, of course, makes the whole movie a joke. The North Koreans are going to have enough soldiers to actually invade the United States. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wolverine.
It's a comedy now, eh?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
The original Red Dawn, when I first saw that, though, it's chilling.
Mm-hmm.
That scene where you start to see the paratroopers landing outside the school windows,
mm-hmm.
it really does just make, and it's one of those movies that sort of like another one is Air Force One, where you just stand up and cheer and you, yay,
yeah,
go
exactly.
United States, mm-hmm. get them.
But it's interesting how they have to pick a politically correct villain in all of these films and how the villains have changed over years. You're right. Years ago, it was Russia, because yeah. Russia was the evil empire, you know, to use Ronald Reagan's phrase. But then once we got past the Yeltsin days, you know, past the Mikhail Gorbachev days, then let's see. There was one Bond film where it was a Bond film or something. But anyway, I remember thinking, oh, that's interesting. They had to use South Africa as a villain this time. And then North Korea and Air Force One used what? Kazakhstan?
Oh,
or Turkmenistan.
Possibly.
It was one of the stands.
One of the stands, yeah.
So, and now we're back to North Korea because, again, we have to be politically correct.
Well,
we don't want to
villain?
Offend anyone.
Who is the villain in Skyfall? That's the newest Bond film.
Don't know. Have not paid attention to Bond films in a long, long time.
Well, I'm looking in the news to see if I can find it, and it's not.
And then, of course, there were the villains in the Back to the Future films, the Libyans! Which is perhaps a...
Driving that little VW van.
Exactly, yeah. Or in the Tick cartoon, which was the Swiss. Yeah.
Swiss.
That's the cool gadgets. Not to be flippant about it, because the situation in Libya, I think, attack and the assassination of our ambassador in Benghazi is nothing to laugh about.
No, it is not.
There was an interesting development, and I just caught this for a bit during the hearings that were conducted on C-SPAN this past week, headed up by Congressman Daryl Issa of California, in which a security specialist within the State Department said, and I quote, "To me, the Taliban is inside the building," end quote. And that was how he expressed his frustration with the State Department at its refusal to allow him the force that he felt necessary to protect the Americans working in Libya. He described being rebuffed again and again, his frustration with superiors who said, "You're asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars," when he was asking for what he felt was the right number of personnel for protection. But interestingly, the State Department came out and in these hearings essentially said, "We never thought that it was this video that the administration said, you know, that this, you know, innocence of Muslims was, we never thought that that was the," essentially what it's appeared to me was that the White House and the State Department, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, are each trying desperately to throw the other one under the bus.
Mm-hmm. That's how it seemed to me too.
Yeah. Because the administration, of course, came out very quickly and sent our ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, out there with the story that it was this childish, laughable video on YouTube that caused the riot. The State Department saying, no, that we never thought that. But the administration also saying that, well, you know, the State Department has refused the requests of the people on the ground for so there's some very interesting infighting taking place within the administration right now between
Why is
those
Susan Rice still the ambassador to the UN?
I don't know much about her background, but I suspect she's got loyalty where it counts.
Hmm. Didn't she walk out on Israel's address?
Did she? Yeah, I think she did.
She walked out on someone's.
Yeah.
I think it was Israel's.
She is an odious person, in my view.
You know her,
yeah.
Huh?
And now, just from what we see in the media and what we've heard her say, I don't have a whole lot of respect for her positions. She may be a very nice person in person. I don't know that.
No, but, we don't know that. And, you know, so here's the thing. My exposure to many of the people that we discuss comes only through the internet, and because we don't have cable news anymore. I do watch some news on our Roku box, and I honestly don't miss the 24/7 news cycles of the cable television stations, because truthfully, there is no truth there. It's primarily Punditville. So I appreciate getting able to watch, frankly, Russia Today, RT.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They have some really, really good interviews on there. And they bring out news that you just aren't going to get on Fox News or CNN. I like Al Jazeera. I know it's really run by Americans in many ways, and it's all English for the most part. Mm-hmm. But again, like with RT and also BBC News and even to a certain degree, CNN International, you get more of a balanced view of the world, what's going on in other places. It isn't politics, politics, politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In America, our news essentially is long-running commentary on the professional wrestling show that is our presidential election.
Yeah, so the truth is that when I draw a conclusion about a person or an event, it is only based... I wasn't there. I don't know the people. Mm-hmm. I can only base it on what is available on the internet. And I'm sure that to a certain degree that that is controlled. In fact, that brings me to a story that I'm not sure that you have in front of you, but just really quickly want to touch on the story that's coming out the last couple of weeks, that there truly is a second internet in Iran. Hmm. They have their own intranet, you might call it that, mm-hmm. but they're calling it the internet, and they shuffle you over to it. In other words, they have checkpoints, so to speak, and if you're typing in certain material, they will choke you over to their internet so you can't see what's going on in the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They are very, very heavily involved in propaganda. Do you think that might happen here? Is it possible that there's something else going on here that we just don't know anything about? I keep reading about the so-called deep web. That there are lots and lots of layers to the World Wide Web, and the stuff that we search is, you know, through Google, that's available on one layer. There are other things that if you know how to type it into the URL bar, that you can find it without Google, that's another layer. And yet that there are, some have said as many as nine
mm-hmm.
layers of the web, and that if you go really, really deep, it's super secret stuff where, I kid you not, no, I kid you not, that is where the really evil stuff takes place, where kids are bought and sold, organs are bought and sold, really disgusting videos are traded back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So the World Wide Web is not necessarily a nice place.
It wouldn't surprise me, since the internet was originally developed as a means of communicating between research institutions and presumably on highly secret projects for the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency.
Or at the time, it was just, originally it was for the Defense, the Department of Defense.
Right. Originally it was called ARPA, which was just the Advanced Research Projects Agency. It added the D later for Defense Advanced
Research. Right.
Yeah,
but the internet
was originally called
for the
ARPA
defense.
Net. Yeah.
Right. And eventually, because schools get involved with doing research for the military, that schools got involved in it too. And mm-hmm. then all the schools in the United States. And then I remember when I... No, I've said this before on the show, so please. I'm old. I get to repeat my stories. when I was at IU, I remember back in the days of the bulletin boards. This was before the World Wide Web, so boy, I'm really old. That I was talking with people from Sweden, and I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. I'm talking to some guy at a school over in Sweden, and he knows. he could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so excited about it. And then, you know, a year or two after that, the World Wide Web was invented and by Al Gore. Thank you very much, Al.
And then came Facebook and
the end
of the world as we know it. Yes.
Well, don't even get me started on social media. I spend a lot of time on that, and I consider that part of my calling. But, boy, there's a lot of bad stuff there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the top level is bad enough. What you can find on the top level is bad enough. If you're going deeper, no desire. Interesting.
I just called Derek's attention to our dog.
Yeah, his head is kind of outside the bed.
I wish I had a camera to take a picture of that.
This would be a good time. If we were streaming this live, we could just sort of turn the camera over that way. And it would be beautiful.
Well, I don't have a camera anymore.
Maybe someday we can do that.
That would be fun.
Anywho, some other odd things going on in the world out there. The Scots, those troublesome Scots, the land of your ancestors.
I know.
Agitating for independence from the United Kingdom.
We always went
agitating. Yeah, I learned something today in reading about this, that Wales, England, and Scotland is Great Britain. And then you add Northern Ireland to that, and that's the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did not know the difference between the two. And I think we Americans are guilty of applying the wrong labels.
And I suspect that when you had Australia and Canada and all the other little protectorates and possessions, mm-hmm. that it's the British Empire.
Probably, yeah. So, but October 14th appears to be the date set for October of 2014. I'm sorry, October of 2014.
I was going to say, that's today.
Yeah. I just got the number in my head. October of 2014. So 2 years hence appears to be, now, I don't believe this is firm yet, but the negotiations taking place between the Independence Movement Party, which is the dominant political party in Scotland at the moment, and the government of England, it looks like they're about to reach a deal which would allow for a vote on independence in 2 years.
Now, is the Stone of Scone, it was returned to Scotland?
That's a good question. I don't know. And the Stone of Scone, well, that's an interesting thing. That's also known as the Stone of Destiny, the Coronation Stone. What was the story behind that? It was
supposedly the pillow that Jacob rested his head upon the night that he wrestled with the angel.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe it had something to do with the coronation of... Was it involved in the coronation of kings in Jerusalem?
Well, don't know about that. The legend does say that, you know, it was the Stone of Jacob. And that it was somehow wound up in Ireland. It somehow wound up in Ireland at Fergus, who was the first king of the Dáil Riata Scots, who came over from Ireland to the west coast of Scotland around the time of King Arthur. And there's some evidence, and there's one historian who, I've got his book sitting on the desk right over there, The Age of Arthur by John Morris, who suggests that Fergus was invited over to keep the Picts, who were the native people who lived in the north of Britain back in the day.
And so those the blue people?
Those were the people who painted themselves blue, right, and used to raid down into Britain. It wasn't England then because the Angles hadn't invaded and taken over yet. This was still during Roman times. In fact, the Picts were the reason that Emperor Hadrian built the wall in the north of the land. There's a theory, unproven, that King Arthur invited Fergus and the Dáil Riata Scots to come over and settle to keep the Picts occupied north of the wall so that Arthur could worry about the Saxons and the Angles in the southern part of Britain. So
just picturing a game that you could play called Angry Picts.
That would be, yeah, that'd be good. Fire them across the wall
at the
Britons on the other side. So anyway, Fergus is recorded to have brought the stone over, and this has some historical support. So he brought the stone over, and how did it wind up at Westminster? Was it when Edward Longshanks
I think my ancestor took it down with him, and
yes,
it was supposedly put underneath the coronation chair, and all the British kings and queens have had that underneath their chairs.
That's right. Edward Longshanks played brilliantly in Braveheart by
Patrick McGoohan.
Patrick McGoohan. Cooler than Bond.
I'm pretty sure that my ancestor looked just like Patrick
McGoohan.
Yeah. And acted just like him.
Yeah.
I'm just pretty sure about that. He was really tall.
You know, I don't know if I ever told you this, but you know, my dad was kind of laughing about this once when I'd mentioned, they had recently seen Braveheart, and I mentioned that we had traced your ancestry back to Edward Longshanks.
Uh-huh.
He said, so when, you know, you do something to make Sharon mad at you, do you avoid windows? Yes. Well, I think we should.
So. Well, anyway. We've tried to avoid windows for years, but that's now right. It's all we can afford.
Apple has just made themselves too expensive.
I was trying to find on here the name of the king who, I remember my sister Anne, who has done so much reading about the history of Ireland, and how she said she believed it was, oh gosh, what were they called? It's the guy who got there with all his daughters. And they arrived in Ireland, and he was actually coming from Israel.
The Tuatha?
The Tuatha De Danann.
Which some believe is what? The tribe of Dan.
Yeah. And that supposedly he's the one, in some legends, he's the one who brought the stone with him.
Okay. All right. But you were correct. The stone was returned to Scotland in 1996. In a symbolic gesture, so it's kept in Scotland when it's not being used for coronations. There was a movie that we saw not too long ago about Christmas Day in 1950. A group of Scottish students stole the stone from Westminster Abbey.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the Hamish Macbeth episode.
And it broke into two pieces while they were moving it.
Yes. And I think they
glued
it back together with cement or something.
Yeah,
someone did that for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good movie. If we can find the name of it, we will put that in the show links. Hamish Macbeth, if you've ever watched that wonderful show with Robert Carlyle, it only had two or three seasons. I think that was one of the episodes. One of his friends was hiding. He had the actual stone. The one that they thought they had in London was a fake, and he had the real one.
Going to have to watch that. That's in a sense, that's a little bit like Doc Martin, of kind of a fish out of water story.
Yeah.
Except that in the case of Hamish Macbeth, he was a constable who actually liked being in the small town and didn't want to go back and take a more responsible position in a bigger
area. Lunatics around.
Lots of lunatics. Yes, like the McLopez brothers.
Yes.
Mick Lopez. Yeah, descendants of Spaniards who washed up on the shores years before. So
we're
worth looking up.
But what else?
Long as we're talking about Britain, let's talk about their preparations for war against aliens. Yes.
Too late.
Yes.
They've already been invaded.
Yeah. Nick Pope, whose name pops up in stories about extraterrestrials, you know, and when we use that word, do note that we use the word in air quotes because we don't believe there are true extraterrestrials. They're more like interdimensionals.
Yeah.
Or extraterrestrial, if you want to say, in the sense of not of this dimension on planet Earth, from a different... You know what I mean. Anyway, Nick Pope said that Britain is working on sophisticated weaponry to defend itself against other life forms in the event of an attack. They want to be able to adopt. In other words, they're trying to develop something like Torchwood.
Too late.
We don't have any special organization.
No,
yeah, of course, if there was one, they wouldn't tell us. But
there's a secret bunker underneath, you know. Most of those buildings, Tower
probably.
Of London.
Sure, yeah.
It's on Doctor Who.
The big carousel.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, we do have several prototype.
The Eye of London.
Yeah. Pope said, we do have several prototype aircraft and drones and other weapons you won't see on the news for another 10 to 15 years. So if we did face a threat from the unknown, then even if there is no Torchwood around now, there would be something like it by then. And they certainly would have some great kit to help in the fight, meaning, you know, gear. He said, look at the Taranis, TARANIS, which is a prototype made by BAE Systems, British Aeronautical Engineering Systems. It looks for all the world like a spaceship in the hangar. And there's an artist's representation of it. And, it does look like something right from Independence Day. But
that big?
The smaller ships, not the big motherships. Yeah, the smaller, the one that they were experimenting on at Area 51. Hmm. And speaking of, wasn't there a story just within the past week of a British film crew trying to get into Area 51?
Yes, they got arrested.
Yeah. I have to look that up real quick. I think it is as much of a stunt as anything else because, this was a story from just yesterday, in fact. A film crew was detained at gunpoint by military forces outside Area 51. This was a film crew from the BBC, in fact. So they're filming a new documentary about
Area 51.
UFO conspiracy theories, and they sent a group out there, and a camouflage-dressed guard with an M16 told a member of the team, "We could make you disappear, and your body will never be found." So,
well, that's nice.
Yeah.
By the way, before we finish the show, and I forget, we have traditionally been, over the last year or two, been posting news items almost daily whenever I can, because I'm the crew here.
Yeah.
I'm your research team. And I love doing it. I love doing it. The side benefits are so nice. Oh, Mr. Gilbert, you're so cute. Anyway, we have been posting that to PID News Wall at Facebook. And because of social media, I think it's just going in directions that I just really trying to pull back from regarding the PID side of things.
It's very addictive.
Well, it's addictive, but there are some connections that are being made that I just find a little – won't get into it now. But trying to do more of the posting at PIDnews.com, which is actually our domain where we originally started posting news stories. And we pulled back primarily because there were a lot of organizations that, understandably, their intellectual media, their intellectual property are the items that have been written by the people that they pay and the reporters that they pay. And the content, I can understand it. They would get very protective about it. And so we are trying not to do that anymore. We used to excerpt from the article and then link to it. We're still linking to it. As far as I'm concerned, they should be happy that we're driving people to their website. Mm-hmm. But essentially, I'm commenting on it because in many ways, PIDnews.com is sort of a blog site. It's a news magazine blog, but just a few of the articles that I've linked to over the last few days, I'm just going to read a few titles to you. So trying to whet your appetite to making it a daily date to go to PIDnews.com and take a look at. We've got a nice feed of an RSS feed of news articles and various categories.
She's done a really nice job of setting up an aggregator that pulls news from different websites in various categories and then organizing them.
I find myself going there just to see what's going on.
This is a really nice job.
Thank you. And by the way, if there's a category that you would like to see up there, just let me know.
Yeah.
The hidden meanings in the new $100 bill. That was a really interesting article.
Huh.
There's a new $100 bill coming out next year, and it has essentially Ben Franklin's picture to the left. There's a big blue bar that goes down the middle that divides the bill into unequal halves, unequal sections, two sections. And the section to the right of the blue line has lots of gold decorations, like the Liberty Bell's in gold and the word 100 is in gold and things like that. But on the left, it's just the old, green and white, so to speak. And then on the right is this new, fancier, lots of gold color. And he makes, I think, a really interesting, writes an interesting essay about what he thinks they're trying to say. He thinks that it's a comment about the dichotomy between the people who believe in fiat currency and the people who believe in the gold standard. It's a great article. So that's one of them that is up there right now. Another one is a very interesting article from Russia Today. 4,000 tons of shells explode in central Russia, leaving a mushroom cloud-like plume of smoke. There's a video at the link, assuming it's still there, because sometimes these things disappear. So I have no control over that. But I watched the video. It is very, very strange. It reminded me a lot of the opening episode to Jericho.
Oh, really?
Off in the distance, you see this mushroom cloud. It's a real mushroom cloud going up. And they're saying that it was just, look, we just, it was a, you know, we had some explosions, just a few, a little bit of armament that was on board a train car, and there was a little derailment, and okay, it was nothing big. But it looks really big in the video.
Huh.
I suspect that no one thought someone would actually put their camera phone or what up. But,
yeah, yeah.
There was also an explosion. You can hear the boom on the video. I'd be really surprised if that's the only boom, because you see the mushroom cloud and you hear a boom. Now, yes, you might see it first and then hear the boom after, but my contention is the person probably heard the boom, saw the mushroom cloud, and then said, oh my gosh, let's get this, and started taping, and then there was at least a second one. So that's another article that's up there. A story from a few days ago that I think is kind of sad in a way. It's that SpaceX capsule that was taking up the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't quite get it there. The little Merlin engines, one of them cut out. I think there are 9 Merlin engines on that SpaceX rocket, and it was taking a Dragon payload up to the space station. Well, it got there with that, but the satellite that it was dropping off on the dropping off on the way, because one of the engines went out, it essentially cut it loose too low, and since the article came out, the satellite has now crashed to Earth.
Well,
So SpaceX, poor little guy.
Yeah, but at least they were able to get the cargo capsule up to the space station, which is good.
Which
is interesting.
ISIS.
You made that. Yeah, Dragon docked with ISIS, and it was sent up by the Merlin rocket. You know, very Arthurian. You know, looking back again to the King Arthur theme.
We keep coming back to that.
Yes, the once in future.
Well, you do know that when Prince William becomes king, he could call himself King Arthur. That is one of his names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote a story about that.
You did.
Short story. Yeah, just speculated that perhaps Arthur.
You should link to that. You still have that?
Yeah, I do. Actually, it's online at writerscramp.ca.
I don't know that that's still up.
Online, but we'll check that out.
One more article I want to bring up, and then I will turn it back to you. Sorry about that. But it's something that's going on in Oregon, in underneath one of the largest volcanoes there.
Yes.
It's a process, not fracking. It's hydro shearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new way of bringing up geothermal energy from a volcano, which is something that's been done over in Iceland and probably elsewhere. But this is one of the considered to be highly active volcanoes in the northwest of the United States. And this is a process where they just essentially inject cold water and then let the steam just come flying out.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I don't know.
It does. It sounds like the opening scene to a made-for-sci-fi movie.
Doesn't it? And I'm sure it will be if it hasn't been already.
That's right. Ripped from today's headlines. Well, the one thing I wanted to mention is sort of a way out for the program, since we are just about at the 60-minute mark. Not that we know it from the sleeping dachshund. Plans are coming together for Future Congress 2. This will be in Dallas, Texas, January 4th, 5th, and 6th of 2013. The dates are deliberate. They deliberately scheduled this event for after December 21st of 2012.
Did you say 2014?
2013.
Oh, sorry. I was calling Sam. I was making
he's
a little
sleeping on the floor.
Well, I
want
to make sure he was still with us. He wasn't moving.
This is an event that to be a part of we've been asked to be a part of it, and we are honored to be there and looking for various ways that we can do something different perhaps than what we've done before. I mean, we've done the live streaming webcasts, we've done the interviews, which we've then become part of DVD sets produced after Future Congress and also after...
And we will still do interviews.
Right, the Prophecy Summit, and we'll be doing those as well, but we're looking for other ways of interacting with folks at this, because the lineup of speakers at Future Congress 2, I mean, my goodness, they have this many speakers.
And every day it seems to me like I look over there and there are more names there.
Right. Just to give you an idea, let's toss out the big name first, and that is Hal Lindsey. Hal Lindsey will be there. Now, agree or disagree with his interpretation of future, you have to admit that Hal Lindsey has been very influential in getting people to consider prophecy and to begin thinking about it and studying it again.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot deny that. And I think that is a good thing.
He got me started.
Yeah.
I think many of us can say that.
I know that my interest in it was piqued when I was a kid because my dad picked up Late Great Planet Earth. And again, agree or disagree with his conclusions, the fact is, we're told in Scripture that we're blessed if we study the words contained therein, add nothing to them, take nothing away. We're not all going to reach the same conclusions, but as long as we're studying and turning to the Holy Spirit for guidance, we will be blessed. Other names on the list, I'm just going to read these as they appear here rather than try to prioritize them one way or the other. Alan Franklin, Bill Koenig, Russ Dizdar, Mike Heiser, Jack Kinsella, Terry James, L.A. Marzulli, Bill Salas, Rob Skiba, G. Thomas Sharp, Larry Spargamino of Southwest Radio Church. Mm-hmm. Met him and interviewed him at the Prophecy Summit. Was very impressed with Larry. Doug Woodward will be there. Alan Kirshner. There will be workshops from J. Michael Bennett, a.k.a. Dr. Future. Jim Fletcher, Guy Malone, Doc Marquis, Don McGee, Dan Duvall, Judd Burton. I look forward to meeting our friendly neighborhood PhD, Judd Burton. I still owe him that phone call, by the way.
Yes, I know.
I know. You gave me the message, and I was...
Judd,
in the middle
it's
of
not
else.
My
it's
fault.
It's not Sharon's fault. Ray Gano, Peter Goodgame will be coming in from Hawaii. We'll get a chance to meet Peter Goodgame face-to-face. C.H. Guire, forgive me for not pronouncing your name correctly.
Guire.
Doug Hamp, Pastor Mike Hoggard. Really enjoyed talking with Pastor Mike.
Nathan Jones, Eric Judkins, David
yes.
W. Lowe.
We can talk about our fantasy baseball lineups for the coming season, Dave.
Jeff Patty, Chris Quintana, Aaron Taylor, Jeff Patty's on there twice.
Yeah.
So is Aaron Taylor. Jeffrey Tompkins, Dix Winston, Miles, and Catherine Weiss. I don't know who they are.
But we will find out.
And, we will indeed.
We have been pleasantly surprised at, Jeff Patty. I was very impressed with him and with Jim Fletcher and their knowledge of prophecy at the Future Congress last year. Meeting them for the first time. Guy Malone, of course, we've talked with many times and look forward to meeting him. And have you met Guy face-to-face yet?
No.
So Guy and Nicole Malone, I'm sure we'll have a chance to meet them and sit and talk with them, and we look forward to that. Again, Judd Burton, Peter Goodgame, David Lowe. This is going to be just a wonderful experience. There will be no way to take in all of these workshops and presentations in the span of 3 days, but hopefully through film, through audio, we can bring as much of this as possible to you, and that is something we talked with David Hitt about, who is coordinating this event. He was the man who coordinated the logistics for the first Future Congress in Branson. Again, this will be in Dallas, January 4th through 6th. The website is the same, futurecongress.com, for information. And we will be able to bring a lot of this to you through PIDradio.com.
There is a page on Facebook, just Future Congress. Like us. And you'll see everything that we post over there. David Hitt posts things there. I post things there. We're trying to get the word out. It's going to be an amazing event. I am so looking forward to meeting some of these people that I've talked to in interviews. Some that I have just admired and respected for decades. Hal Lindsey, I have no idea if we're going to be able to interview him. Probably not.
No.
Because I know that he has asked that he be given as much quiet, opportunities to enjoy. He wants to attend sessions. He wants to get to hear. He wants to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't get to do that very often. So we will try to at least spend a few minutes with him.
Yeah, and bear in mind that Mr. Lindsey is, 83 years old? Yeah. So,
83 years young.
Well, that's true. I mean, gosh.
He's an active guy.
He is, just as...
And Jack Kinsella,
Southwest Radio Ministries.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. Sorry.
Brain cramping. Sorry, it's too late in the day. I'll get this here.
Oh, Sam's moving. It must be time to go.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
He just stretched.
We're looking forward to that, and we hope that we can... again, bring much of what takes place
exactly.
there.
Exactly. And if you think you can go, we would love to meet you.
Sure.
But save yourself some money. Try to get the registration in before December 1st.
Yep.
And you save $30 per person.
Noah Hutchings.
Yes!
Noah Hutchings. Okay, coming up, we'll talk with Cliff Garner from Turkey. He's on the ground in Turkey. We'll get just some feedback from what it's like there as that hot spot continues to flare between the Turks and the Syrians. And, you know, pray for the folks there because, again, the people there, at least from what he's telling us, are mostly opposed to the idea of going to war. And I think that would be true of most people around the world.
Yeah.
Most of us average folk, we just want to live peaceable lives, to raise our families in quiet, without interruption and disruption.
Exactly.
And the powers that be on this world, sadly, just don't want to seem to let that happen. So pray for them. And in the meanwhile, until we talk again, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.